From WGVU Public Media, this is Powerful Women Let's Talk. Conversations with women making an impact in West Michigan. Stay connected to Powerful Women. Please like and subscribe.
Hello and welcome to Powerful Women Let's Talk. I'm Jennifer Moss, host and reporter here at WGVU. And joining me today is India Manns, community advocate, activist, and philanthropist. India is well known for her passion for racial and gender equity, diversity and inclusion, and education and health equity, especially as it relates to women, children, and people of color. Welcome, India, and thanks for joining us today on Powerful Women Let's Talk.
So happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So to say that you are a busy woman, I think probably is perhaps an understatement. One of the biggest understatements. You serve on at least, what, 8 boards now?
Yeah.
Eight boards.
Yeah, it's 8. Yeah.
In our community. And you're also very active in many other circles and community events as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to get in where I fit in.
Absolutely. So we're going to give a little backdrop. Okay. You're a fellow Detroiter. Hello.
Yes.
Also lived in Oakland, California before arriving here in Grand Rapids back in 2013.
Yes.
You have a marketing degree, a master's in science administration, and you've worked in sales and management before arriving here in GR. Once here, though, in GR, what made you move into the advocacy role for those who are marginalized?
Believe it or not, when I left Oakland, I was doing art. I was completely just okay with just doing my art. And it was our son. It was what happened to him. We actually came here because my husband, Bill, came to run St. Mary's at the time. He was president of St. Mary's. And interestingly, he was the first African-American in any high level there at the hospital. So, I mean, it's quite surprising that you know, he was hired as president. And so if anything, you know, happened or people, you know, felt any kind of way, we thought it would happen to him. But it actually happened to our son, who was going into eighth grade at the time. And, you know, people like to say, oh, well, you know, it's a difficult age. No, this was blatant racism. I mean, it was very clear. There were things that were said to him from other children and things like that, that it was very obvious, you know, mm-hmm. what it was. And so it really kind of, that's what Mama Bear just kind of pushed me out there. Because what I also learned is that what was happening to Justin was not uncommon for kids of color in this community and what I call outlier schools. GRPS, you know, they speak over 72 languages. GRPS is very diverse. But when it comes to our schools and suburban communities and the parochial schools and things like that, yeah, it's a whole different, you know, mm-hmm. experience for those kids. And so it started out as a fight for Justin, and then it just became a fight for everybody, for all kids. And they all became my kids.
Absolutely. And that made you then jump into the community, because this was not home. I mean, you're from Detroit originally, yes. but you made it home and you jumped right in. And then again, jumping on, what, 8 boards? At one point, though, you were on many more.
It was a combination of, and if you count the, like, and I'm not counting my board committee, because there's board committees and then there was community committees. So it was 19 total by time. Well, if you factored in the board committees, it's about 23 of, you know, the combination of all of that. But after the pandemic, you know, a lot of stuff in the community mm-hmm. kind of slowed down. So those a lot of those committees and things that I got involved with that was just community related, you know, they kind of weren't there anymore. Absolutely. So now with board committees, it's probably somewhere in the mid-teens.
Yeah, absolutely. It keeps you really busy. But and part of the reason behind that, it's important to have a presence on boards, on yeah. various boards, because in part it ensures voices are represented in our community. And I would imagine from your perspective, being on boards is a catalyst for change, would you say?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Most of, you know, it was very obvious in the beginning. A lot of opportunities that was provided to me was because of Bill. I mean, Bill had a position in the community and people wanted to make sure that I felt welcome and involved and all of that. So a lot of that happened. But as I'm joining these boards, I'm realizing that there's not a lot of diversity, you know, and so that became a passion of mine of trying to bring diversity to basically whatever I do. But then it got to a point where people were recruiting me to be on boards because they wanted me to bring diversity or to, you know, to speak on diversity. And they liked my perspectives and my points of view, and they wanted that voice on the board. So
how important today, after coming through from the time you first moved here, having to deal with what you dealt with your son, getting on boards and things and becoming very active in the community, how important is that piece of your world in continuing to not only take part, but give back? I mean, you're very involved. You open the doors for many people and for much conversation. How important is it to keep those conversations going, especially in this day and age?
Oh my God, it's like extremely important, and it's really important right now. Very important right now. But, you know, if you don't keep the conversation going, you don't keep the movement going, you know, it stops. And I'm actually seeing that, not with the current of what's going on right now, but just in general, coming out of the pandemic, you know, there was a slow wake up to the community. And where prior to the pandemic, you know, I personally encouraged a lot of, you know, you have to be seen, you have to be present. And when I say that to people of color all the time, you know, because people will say, well, I don't feel welcome and I don't, you know, and this and that. Well, you have to kind of make your space. I mean, it's hard for people to ignore a large group of people, you know what I'm saying? Particularly if, what I always joke and say, particularly if you're dropping dollars on the table, no one will ignore you and your money. So, but, you know, I'm going to events now and I'm starting to see, you know, just me and maybe a few other people there. And so I see that there's going to be some work to do that again to, you know, mm-hmm. to tell people that we got to come out. We got to show up, particularly in this day and age where people are trying to mute the voices of diversity, equity and inclusion. You know, like I said, it's hard to ignore a large group of people. So you got to be present and, you know, and you fight for your space at the table.
So being on the board, you do have a reputation. You're very competent and accomplished fundraiser, and you're known for that. And in fact, you co-chaired the WGVU 50th Gala. And that's when I heard about the infamous India Shakedown, where you're very good at fundraising and getting people to contribute to worthy causes. What's the magic there?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. I have no idea. But, you know, it works. And I mean, I'm blessed to have that ability. And, you know, what I really think it comes from is that it's usually for a good cause. You know, I mean, people know that I don't lend my voice to nothing that's not important. Right. And so if it's important and you can help people understand why it's important, then in my, you know, experience, they give happily, you know. I mean, sometimes begrudgingly, but still.
But still, you know, happily. And they still give.
So. And they still give. Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
the key factor there.
Yeah.
So as a testament to your dedication of support to the community has in turn recognized your contributions. You've won numerous awards, including the YWCA Tribute Women of Achievement Award. You were listed in the Grand Rapids Business Journal as one of the 50 most influential women in West Michigan. The Richard DeVos M. DeVos Heart Hero Award and the GRCC Giants Community Service Award, among many others. Let me ask you this. Does being recognized as such perhaps fuel that desire, your desire to do even more in community?
Not really. I mean, I appreciate the recognition and, mm-hmm. you know, everybody likes to, you know, be recognized for things that they do. But I mean, it wouldn't change anything that if nobody ever recognized me, it wouldn't change what I do mm-hmm. because what I do comes from the heart. I mean, there's blatant inequities. And, you know, so I do what I do because I'm trying to create change, not because I want someone to, you
to
know,
recognize
kinda,
you.
Yeah, to see me and recognize me.
But it does make
me.
You feel a little good that at least your work has been looked at as something that's noteworthy.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think everybody, you know, likes to be recognized mm-hmm. or to receive some acknowledgement that, yeah, what you're doing is
important.
But
at the heart of it, it's just the work that you're doing
and
the people that you're helping, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So in our Powerful Women podcast, one of our goals is to empower and encourage others. As you look at the work that you do and have done, what words of encouragement might you have for others who are striving along the way? Because, again, as we talked about, the work isn't always easy.
No, it's not easy. And I would just say, just, you know, be present, be determined, and, you know, just make your space. I mean, you kind of have to, people aren't going to always give you the space and the time, and you kind of have to make it. And I realize that it's not, you know, easy for, that's easier said than done. I guess I'll say it that way. But, you know, you kind of make a way, find a way, make a way, find a connection that'll help you make the way, you know, because that's what other people do. And I always tell people, you know, that, you know, you got to do what they do. So that's what they do. So do it.
Mm-hmm. And you recently embarked upon something that I believe is unique to Grand Rapids. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but you worked to get a beautiful art installation at the Grand Rapids Art Museum. Artwork created by a young African-American man, Mario Moore. Is this the first such effort, as well as the first installation such as this at the Grand?
It is the very first. And it's actually, yes. I mean, Graham acknowledged that they had never had anything like this, where a group of community members came together to pool money to help purchase this art. So it was a great honor. Mario Moore is a great artist, and Graham said they wanted the piece. And, you know, a lot of people think, well, a museum, they have money, they should, you know, can't they buy their own art? But a lot of times donors are specific to with their donations as to what type of art can be purchased. And they cannot, you know, they can only use those funds to purchase art mm-hmm. in that way. So when you look at just a general fund and I just want to buy a piece of art, you know, there's the funds are not always there. And in this case, the funds were not there. And so they said they wanted it. And I said, OK.
And you spearheaded a group to make that happen. How important is it in you as you look at what you do as it relates to advocacy and pushing for different things in our community, to have an installation such as this now in the Graham?
I mean, it's a great honor. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I still haven't, like, I don't even, like, I haven't fully processed the emotion behind that. You know, people have texted me and said different things, and you know, some I've responded to, some I haven't responded to yet. And, you know, there have been posts on Facebook and all of this, and I haven't posted any. I still can't believe we did it. I just can't. It's just overwhelming to think about, you know, the magnitude of what we've done. This piece, it's in the permanent collection. It'll be there forever. I mean, hopefully I'll be dead and gone, and it'll still be there, you know, with the names of the contributors and, you know, what we did. And in my opinion, it's only the beginning. You know, my goal is to do the same thing, at least one piece every year, to be unveiled in February, Black History Month. And the aim is African-American artists, and to just, you know, do what we can to bring more art into the museum.
As you talk about moving forward in the future, what is your passion going forward? What are your current goals as we continue on into this relatively new year? We're going into March now, but what would you say your goals are? As you look at advocacy, as you look at philanthropy, what would you say?
Oh, my God. You know, I think sometimes people look at me and they think, she must have it all planned.
You just go with the flow.
I just run by the seat of my pants. Sometimes I feel like I'm barely making it. Just roll from one thing to the next. But going to events and not seeing the presence of people of color I know that that's going to be something that I'm going to work on in the next, you know, couple of years or so, and encouraging the people to come back out and be present, because particularly now, particularly when, you know, they're trying to erase diversity and inclusion and equity and all this different kind of stuff. I mean, we have to be present. You can't ignore a large group of people, and I need people to understand that. So I'm going to work on that. A little passion, deep rooted, seated down low passion that I have that I got to bring up because time is not on my side in this particular instance is Helen Claytor. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Claytor, and just making sure that they, you know, get the recognition. And I understand Helen Claytor has been well recognized in this community. Dr. Claytor has not. I would like to get a bust of him, and I'd like to have it installed, like, right near her statue that is, I don't know the name of the park. I know that GRCC owns it. You know, mm-hmm. I know the mm-hmm. location of it mm-hmm. or whatever, but I'd like to see a bust installed of him. I'd like to make sure that their home is recognized as a historical site. And so, you know, I kind of have that. And I keep telling myself I need to pause because they do have two daughters that are still alive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're getting older. And, you know, it's going to be important to get things done, you know, while they're still alive.
And for our listeners, prominent doctor, Clater, little backdrop.
Oh, okay. Yes. He was the first African-American doctor to get admitting rights in 1935. So prior to that, and if you had an African-American doctor, which if you were African-American, that's probably what your doctor was, you know, they couldn't admit you in the hospital. And so he received that in 1935 with St. Mary's. And it took another 10 years before another hospital allowed that. So that was a great achievement. But collectively, my understanding, they were a power couple working on, you know, racial equity, housing issues. I believe Dr. Clater also was the president of the Urban League, or he helped to start the Grand Rapids chapter of the Urban League mm-hmm. and things like that. And so that is something that I keep telling myself I really need to pause and, you know, try to work on that.
And work on that. So that's a future goal. Finally, do you have a message of encouragement for those who are earlier in their journey, our younger individuals who might need a little inspiration in moving forward?
Well, what I would say is that, you know, you kind of, I go back to, you have to kind of make your space, or you got to, you know, grab the cape of somebody else that has the space and see if you can just fly along. You know what I'm saying? Attach yourself to somebody, connect to people, let your voice be heard. But something I want to say really important, because I've heard this from a few young people, and it just disturbs me to my core, where they are saying that they don't understand why they need to be concerned about things that don't involve them. If it doesn't, you know, affect me directly, why do I need to worry about that? Well, at some point it will affect you. You know, just because it doesn't show up on your door and say, hey, you know, I'm a problem for you. At some point, some way, somehow, you know, if everybody's ignoring things, it'll eventually end up on all of our plates. So, you know, I'd like to say, while I want to encourage people, that particular thing right there is just, it's just alarming to me. Mm-hmm. It just sets my hair on fire to hear people say that. And so, you know, we have to all care. This is an example I use for a young person. I'd still be enslaved if there weren't white abolitionists that cared about, you know, my freedom. And so you have to care about other people and other things, even if it don't directly involve you. It didn't directly involve them to help, you know, people find freedom, but they cared enough to make sure that people had freedom. And so we all have to care.
It's that total sense of community.
Yes.
And being involved.
Yes.
Thanks so much for joining us today, India, and sharing your story and for all that you do in our community. And we want to thank you all for listening and joining us for this edition of Powerful Women, Let's Talk.
Thank you.
Powerful Women, Let's Talk is a production of WGVU Public Media. Episodes available at wgvunews.org and on Apple and Spotify. Please like and subscribe.